Walking through the city of their birth, they looked around. It was not an unpleasant day, and this was a rarity, as the place they had chanced to call home bore a predominantly damp climate and predominantly grey people. This, they thought, is why it's so important to find those moments of light, the burning hearths of small communities in the less well-trodden parts of the city, the outsiders. It was a place made rich by trade, wealthy due to the sweat of others, a merciless place, with all the malice and intrigue of a medieval feudal system. The only glint that they could see on these streets came from the polished wheel of an automobile sitting with its chauffeur, awaiting the arrival of its duke. They had trodden a strange route. Their father had disappeared before they were born, leaving their mother, who worked making costumes, to bring them up alone. Their mother worked in the theatre, and because of the hours she kept, it had become their home. More than that, it had become their family. As they grew, it provided bed, board and education. It was there that they discovered their particular eye for detail and their innate sense of design. Naturally enough, the other members of the company, noting their talent, had quickly employed their skills to help make the sets. Here they learnt the trade of scenic painting. They had quickly risen among the company, and by their early 20s, they were designing and producing all of the backdrops for their productions. Their work proved to be greatly admired, and they had taken the opportunity to move away from theatre and employ their skills in the exotic world of furnishing and interior design. Yet their early training was never far away, and they found themselves specialising in creating wall hangings and drapes for wealthy clients. For a time, they had felt that the world was theirs, being the toast of the town and always in demand. Yet the cruelty of such a business is that fashions change so quickly, and therefore so must you, for fear of becoming irrelevant. Having braved this storm for many years, they now found themselves moving rapidly through middle age, but were still able to boast clients of a certain social circle, although far fewer. And their advancing years meant that it was now often the children of those who had once formed their core circle of patrons. This changing of situation had also meant a change in the way they operated, as they found themselves not only designing, but also producing these pieces again with their own hands. It seems that you can never truly escape your own circumstances. This morning, they had an appointment with one such child who, perhaps charitably, had asked them to come to discuss new curtains. As they walked down the street lined with stucco townhouses, they allowed themselves a brief smile, as this particular residence contained one of their favourite hangings, a commission for the current owner's parents, which had been made at the height of their powers, an abstracted landscape produced in the modern geometric style of the time. Looking down at themselves, swathed in a collection of grey hues and midnight blues, they glanced at their hands and considered the miles they had travelled, the metres of cloth they had cut. Their skin looked thin like paper, age catching up. Yet still, today they had reason to be cheerful. Emerging from the reverie, they looked up as they rounded the corner, approaching their destination. At that moment, their heart convulsed and it felt like it was forcing its way up into their mouth. For what could they see but a newly erected flagpole on the roof of the townhouse, and what was flying from it but a section cut from their favourite hanging.
This particular section seemed to have been purposefully cut to isolate a family of shapes from the rest of the fabric. It was a crisp, sunny day, and the pastel-coloured figures danced in perfect formation against the blue sky. They exchanged silent, hopeful looks. This was a good omen, but they knew better by now than to tempt faith. After shuffling up the small flight of stairs leading to the front door, their short legs already exhausted from the exertion of the brief trip, Maurice caught his breath and pressed down on the doorbell. To their surprise, it was not the housekeeper who opened the door, but the client herself. She beckoned them to come in with her warm, slightly distant smile, and they followed her through the hallway into the sitting room. Perching on the edge of the turquoise sofa, they exchanged phrases about the weather and quips about their health. On the table was a silver tray offering two kinds of biscuits and sweet cherry syrup to be diluted with water. There occurred, as is typical in such situations, a sudden pause in the conversation, and they sensed that their client had something important to tell them. In the kind of quiet voice that belongs to those who are used to being listened to, she recounted recent events that had led to her dear brother becoming entirely bedridden and unable to leave his room. Up until very recently, a man about town and a longtime board member of various important institutions of the city, he was now barely able to sit up long enough to eat his supper. To make matters worse, his inability to participate in the fundraisers and galas he was invited to pained him so severely that any reminder of the outside world had become unbearable. Therefore, he now insisted on staff keeping the curtains of his room closed at all times. Even if the windows had to be periodically opened to let in fresh air, he wished no exposure to natural light or outdoor views. Their client's request was this: to furnish her brother's room with curtains that enveloped the entire length of the walls, were never opened, and that would leave absolutely nothing for him to desire from the world beyond.
Looking back into the murky depths of his memory, Maurice saw this little boy, wrapped in exotic fabrics belonging to his mother, following him around the house when it was his parents' city home. He also remembered the tone that his father had used when he saw him, a scolding ring that insisted that a young gentleman of his social caliber had no time for such fantasy, for the triviality of creativity. Now this little boy had become a man about town, a man about town who had been confined to his bed. This, Maurice thought, is the world that I can make for him, the one which his father denied him, the future that he may have wished if his birth had not placed such rigours upon him. Yet he cautioned himself. We must remember where this man comes from. He is no bohem, and any fantasy of that kind would be a mere holiday, having no real desire to live as a garret painter. This fantasy must be enough to sustain him into the future. For this princeling, we will make something with a more baroque flavour. Deep hues, luxurious fabrics, split marble, ornate capitals, floors of a terrazzo, and let's not forget, some poetry. It's the poetry that lifts this from an overdressed church into something more personal, something that is his. I drove my feet through a desert whose mirage fluttered like a host. Voracious for glory, greedy for danger, I roamed the horizons of Al-Kulab, watching time-level mountains in its search and its hunger for me. Yes, this must be a backdrop which has space for relaxation, for intrigue, and for romance. We will make him a world.
In the days following their first encounter with the client, Maurice and Louis spent hours in the workshop, a dingy space housed within a courtyard, and in dire need of a restoration well beyond their strength. Fabrics, trimmings, sketches, and stained teacups were scattered all over the heavy wooden cabinets and work tables, interspersed with candelabra, pairs of scissors, and a coat of dust whose thickness varied according to when an object had last been used. As if transported back to their busy past, when the workshop was filled with employees cutting and stitching and chatting, they spent long, passionate hours imagining the new world they would create. They'd always been passionate about the work, but his commission became a true obsession. They would often forget to eat, and lost in the reveries of marbles, frescoed ceilings, and golden carvings, they would spend entire days in a state of trance, falling asleep on the work chairs and continuing their planning through the uncannily similar dreams they would have. Following their trusted method, they started building a model of the project to show the client. What would have usually been a small reproduction became a full-scale replica with a soft structure of plush fabrics starting to envelop the whole workshop.
With his padded package strapped to a small wheeled trolley, Maurice set off back to the house of his clients. He wasn't sure if it was all that fabric padding, but he sensed that he may be drifting faintly into madness. Yet what is madness, if not just another frame of reference? For the room with no visible windows, he had designed his own, to be painted on the walls, of course. They are rectangular in shape and portrait in orientation, with the centre divided into five separate panes spanning out from a triangular centre. Its design had something of classical geometry, with a little of his personal language of straight-lined modernity. But crucially, it disrupted any sense of view by isolating anything it captured into non-standard forms and therefore cut up what may be beyond it. The result was like a series of simultaneous vignettes or the various rolls of film running in an editing suite. In short, it was a story. He had realised that a story like this needed a protagonist, someone through which to live in this world of curtains, an avatar for this isolated man to inhabit. This was the real moment of inspiration, for he had realised that the avatar was him. Maurice was the character at the centre of his client's new world, full of lusty, youthful exchanges and memories of hot summer nights. It would be Maurice's magnum opus, his attempt at immortality. Although convinced by the necessity of this concept, he was not yet entirely sure how he would approach pitching it to his client, for perhaps they did not see him as something to aspire to for eternity. They were, however, certain that it involved making more of the desires and extravagances that could be experienced and a little less of their personal involvement. Yes, in that way it was no different from any pitch. Tell them your idea by making them see what they want and thinking that they came up with it. He would just have to find their weaknesses. And with that, he wrapped his large cashmere shawl tighter around his neck to prevent a little of this eternal cold and quickened his step to meet his maker.
Louis stayed in the workshop. He made himself a cup of licorice tea and drank it absently, his eyes fixed on the golden tailoring scissors his mother gave him when he was just a teenager working on his first theatre set, a production of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream. As the sickly sweet taste lingered in his mouth, he thought of how striking the sharp object looked against the petrol blue velvet it was sitting on. In contrast to Maurice, who was impatient and always took life too seriously, Louis favored an even, calm state of mind and always fought to do things at his naturally slow rhythm. The differences between them had once been their greatest strength. They could bounce off each other and find equilibrium through their exquisite creations. Everything changed 6 years ago when Louis allowed himself to fall in love with an antiquarian bookseller who traveled through their town searching for a rare book about embroidered botanicals. He left Maurice and their workshop behind without saying goodbye, escaping the job that felt like a prison built of endless fabric, boring clients, and restrictive deadlines. Louis returned only 1 year ago after the bookseller's death, caused by poisonous berries ingested during a summer hike. He was grateful to Maurice for accepting him back in his life without question, but things would never be the same between the two brothers. There was too much resentment and guilt, many things left unsaid. The new commission was their chance to reconnect, to communicate by thread and needle, as they used to in their youth. Picking up the book about embroidered botanicals that his lover left him, Louis decided to channel the absolute freedom he had discovered living together for 5 years. He felt a sort of inspiration that had not come to him since his early days at the theatre, long before their commercial success catering to the whims of wealthy people. He opened the old book with its marble covers and started to mark the various motifs he would use to inject the tapestry with life. Pearl cotton oleanders, silk nightshades, and metallic thread pansies.
As Maurice once again rounded the corner on his way to the stucco townhouse, the flash of his work flying from the house again stuck in his throat.
His feet felt heavier, as if walking through glue, and he felt a vein on the side of his head starting to throb. It was strange, he thought, how this attack, as he saw it, irked him so. His work had evidently always been the defining element in his life, in how he saw himself, in who he was. It had governed every relationship he'd had, from his partnership with Louis, to his social life, and even his lack of a long-term partner. All had been dictated by the work. Yet none of this made his stance over the flag soften. On the contrary, it hardened his feeling of righteous anger. As he was contemplating these emotions, he drifted up the Yorkstone steps and was ushered, without really noticing where he was going, back into the sitting room. But in place of the client this time sat her brother, propped up in the middle of the turquoise sofa and smothered in numerous blankets, giving him the appearance of a folded pile of laundry, curtains closed so as to block the world away. Suddenly realising where they were, they snapped out of their reverie and felt the syrupy note of business hit their tongue as they greeted this man in want of dreams. Being faced with little in the way of response, Maurice thought it best to rely on the charm he had developed over the years and launched into his pitch for the hanging that he and Louis had been preparing. "Do you ever have that feeling," he began, "that you have so little left to need, that you want everything?" "Yes, I thought you might. Well, I have developed the most luxuriant, dreamy landscape for you." And on he continued, explaining the various motifs, the architecture, the materials, ancient Assyrian columns, isometric modernism, pearl cotton oleanders, the spaces to explore, the things to see, a corner where he had once had the most beautiful day with a handsome young thing, a seat where he had once convinced an old countess that he should redesign her entire country home, a small nook which reminded him of being backstage at the theatre as a boy and sleeping during performances, the smell of oil sticks used as makeup, the touch of velvet on his fingers, the gentle caress of a pansy as it brushed his cheek. On and on he went in this manner, delving through many years of images, many miles of experiences, and many instances of great joy and sadness, of hedonism and hard, underpaid graft, until suddenly he stopped and looked up. There sat his client, simply staring at him, saying nothing, unable to move, just looking in disbelief at the man in front of him who was, in his eyes, spouting such nonsense, filling what was supposed to be a restorative and calm interior addition with so much emotion, such madness. In that instant, Maurice knew that the commission was lost, and all that he could see in his mind was the defiled hanging that flew aloft from the front of the house. And as if a red mist had risen before his eyes, he drew himself up to his full height, dropped the shawls from around his shoulders and lurched towards the window, pulling the curtains open, turning to look at the man sat there covering his face in shock as he screamed, "There, here's your world, have it. You are no longer welcome to mine." With one great exertion of strength, he yanked on the heavy silk curtains and started to tug and pull them down, raining hooks and other sundries from the rails. As the last of it fell, they wrapped themselves up in what must be 30-plus metres of heavy silk, and with that they turned on their heel and walked out of the house. This, they thought, was their new beginning, their Babylon, a blank canvas to plan for a better world, to build their world, a tent in which to house their community of outsiders, or at least enough cloth for 6 summer suits.